Hello and welcome to this week's Therapy for Me, and I'm back where I should be in my office because you can hear my clock. But that doesn't mean that LA is not going to feature for most of this week's TFM, even though technically I was only in LA for Monday. I left at 3 o'clock, 3:30 Monday afternoon. But I've just got a few things on the back of that that I want to talk about, and the fact that actually not a lot has really happened since I got back. Anyway, let's crack on with a little bit of that twangy guitar.
Monday.
I think I mentioned last week about how dry the air had been while we were out in LA. And I think the figure I quoted was 7% humidity, which is really, really dry, and hence the reason why we were wandering around with sort of dry lips and dry skin and what have you for the week. The weather finally broke over the weekend, and Sunday was very, very wet. It started off kind of a sort of rain that probably was fairly useful. It wasn't actually coming down too hard, but it got quite bouncy through the day on Sunday. So I don't know how much of that will have actually made its way into the ground and dampened the conditions down. And certainly when I went for a run on Monday morning, there wasn't evidence of huge puddles of water and all those kind of things, even though there was a lot of that around on Sunday. And I went for a run. I didn't really know how running in Burbank was going to be. The hotel we stayed at, which was a residence inn, which meant that you get like an apartment, effectively. You get an open room with a kitchen and with a lounge area, and then with a bed in the corner, and then a bathroom. So, which is kind of strange sleeping in that. I mean, we've stayed in them when we visited with the family, and normally there's kids on the sofa bed, and you're in the room, and it all feels quite family like and what have you, and quite holiday like. But when you're staying in there on your own, it's a little stranger. In fact, I did find myself talking to myself quite a bit, which I think was down to the size of the room. I felt I needed to have some form of dialogue with, or that the room itself needed dialogue going on. And obviously the only option I had was kind of with myself. But I got up and went for a run, not really knowing how it would be running around Burbank, because we were fairly close to downtown Burbank. And we were sort of wedged in between downtown Burbank and a massive IKEA. In fact, the hotel was actually on IKEA Way, which seemed very, very European. And so I set off and I headed up the slope. So Burbank's kind of on a slope down to the freeway. And I thought, well, if I go up a road, there's less chance I'm going to get caught at loads and loads of crossings. Because one of the problems with running along the road in the US is every time you get to the end of a block, if it's a really populated area, I mean, Anaheim exactly was that, you have to wait at a set of lights to cross. Because they don't take very kindly to you just randomly crossing. So the road being clear of traffic is no reason to allow you to cross the road. So not wanting to pick up a jaywalking charge, then when I was in Anaheim, I stopped at every single crossing and kind of waited. Now in Anaheim, it's fine because the blocks are half a mile long. So, you do 6 miles and you're making effectively 10 stops or whatever it is. And looking at Burbank, those intersections were far closer, and I didn't really fancy the idea of literally 5 minutes, well, probably not even 5 minutes running, 2 or 3 minutes worth of running and then 2 or 3 minutes worth of stopping. So I headed up the hill, hoping that we would get away from sort of traffic control and lights and onto crossings, where the one advantage you have in the US when you cross is that if it isn't traffic light controlled, everybody waits for you, because as scared as I am about a jaywalking charge, everybody else is far more scared of being sued if they hit me. So I ended up running up the side of this bank, and I ended up going all the way to the road right at the top near a golf course. And that was a climb of getting on a mile and a half, a steady climb of getting on a mile and a half. And I got up there and I ran past the golf course, and then I dropped down, and I found myself at a fire department. Fire Station 16, Burbank's fire department, was right up on the edge of what was sort of like the woodland and the bushland. And it was, as soon as you saw, as soon as you got close to seeing what the terrain was like, it is so obvious why there's so many issues with fires. Because you've got trees that are, you know, you would have normally thought probably spaced apart enough to stop there being any major issue. But then you just got twigs and branches. And because everything was so dry, it was literally like a bed of kindling. And I ran past this fire station, and there was like an old-fashioned kind of gauge on a sign that was basically giving the indication of what they thought the risk of fire was on that particular day. And bear in mind, we'd had a full day and a half of rain. That gauge had gone down from the very, very deepest red to more like a deep orange, which I would suggest they were still saying, look, the risk of fire as of today is still around about 90%. And it just makes you wonder when you then see how close all those houses were to that area. Or it doesn't make you wonder. It just makes you realise how much of a problem, A, it is, and B, it potentially is going to be if similar weather conditions continue, well, as I guess they are, moving forward.
Tuesday.
I'm going to repeat something that I said on Corona Diaries this week, because I mentioned a little story about a guy called Captain Bob Islett, who was the pilot who flew us back from LA, and it was his final flight. And I just want to, I'm so touched by this whole story. I'm so touched by how Virgin, how the crew, how everybody in at the various airports and what have you, did all these little things to make his final trip special. The first we got wind of it was the fact that the signs walking down, as you walk down, you know, the tunnel to get on the plane, the airwalk to get on the plane, all the signs were congratulating Captain Bob Islett, the pilot, on his final journey. Obviously, as I mentioned, and I wasn't conscious of it on the flight, but my next door neighbour mentioned that he'd done a wing wave on the way out, so he'd bidded, I guess it's the equivalent of just tipping your hat at LA as he left, and he did a walk around the plane just about half an hour before landing, just as we really started, before we started the descent. He did a walk around the plane, which was filmed and was really nice, and everybody gave him a round of applause, and it was great, and he seemed a really genuinely lovely man, and I can't begin to tell you how much affection there was on board for him amongst the crew. So clearly a lot of them have flown with him before, and clearly, you know, they've all gotten very well, and everybody just had so much time for him. And I mentioned that his wife had been on the flight, which I thought was a really, really nice touch that allowed her to take that final flight with him, which I thought was really nice. She was in the cockpit. And actually, I'm assuming it's his wife. It could have been his sister or anybody, but there was somebody there. There was a civvy there who was clearly in the cockpit, which I thought was great. And she must have had something to do with him. So apologies for jumping to the assumption it was his wife. But whatever the relationship, it's still a really, really nice thing. And then he got a special escort in at Heathrow, so he got a special kind of escort to take him on to stand for the final time, which was just, again, just a really lovely thing. So I know I keep banging on about it, and I've banged on about it in two podcasts now. You might think it's just a cheap way of getting extra bit of content for TFM. Actually, the other way around, actually, it probably shouldn't have come up in TCD. But anyway, but it would. I don't know. It makes your heart leap when things like this actually happen.
Wednesday.
Now we're going to potentially disagree on the pronunciation. And actually, we're not going to disagree on the pronunciation because I don't know what's right or what's wrong. So it actually doesn't matter to me. But circadian or circadian rhythms. I would assume that the circus from circle. So circadian would seem more logical, but whichever it is, are a huge part of jet lag. They're your internal body clock, the thing that pegs you down to where you are, that tells you when to wake up and go to sleep and when and all those kind of things. And they cover things like, you know, bowel movements and all manner of things are affected by your circadian rhythms. And consequently, they're very, well, when they get messed up by travel across time zones, then that's what means you lose all sense of anchor to particular points of the day. And actually, in reality, you tend to anchor back to the time zone you've come from rather than the time zone you are actually in. And that would explain why, as a perfect example, when I'm on the West Coast, I'm always very hungry in the morning. And if you add the 8 hours on to a 9 o'clock breakfast, then you'll find yourself getting towards the afternoon. And it probably doesn't surprise you that I'm always at my hungriest, or normally at my hungriest, about 4 or 5 o'clock back here. That seems to be the point where I start. If I'm going to get ravenous, it'll be that time. So I tend to, actually, bizarrely, it's helpful. It's helpful to, you know, particularly with me running in the morning, it's actually more helpful to be hungry at breakfast after you've had a run than it is to be particularly hungry at the end of the day. But that's one of the things that I find myself, you know, experiencing every single time I go over. The bit that's interesting that I found out today, not surprisingly, it's worse when you fly east than west. It's bad both ways, but it's worse when you fly east. Though, surprisingly, I don't find coming home as much of an issue, but then I never fully acclimatise, so I don't know what it would be like to fly back home having really fully acclimatised to US time. So I don't want to know how bad that could be, or I can't comment on how bad that could be, because the longest I've ever been out there for is about 2 weeks, and even then it probably wasn't enough to fully acclimatise. But the little guide, I've seen two or three places who've done this, and there's actually a website where you can go and put in your trip dates and it'll work it out for you, is that for every hour of time you go through, so every hour adjustment you go through, it takes a day to fully adjust. So, and the figure quoted for eastward is a day and a half. So, that would suggest that you would need, and I would need on a trip like this, I would need 8 days, which probably explains why the best night's sleep I have is normally the last one. But I would need 8 days to fully adjust. Now, because I picked up a head cold when I was out there, I didn't sleep well on the last couple of nights anyway, which wasn't down to, that probably wasn't down to a internal body clock issue. That was down to being bunged up and waking up because I was just literally needing to clear my pipes, so to speak. But that probably then helped on the way back because I'd not got into a swing of decent sleep. But that kind of day per hour on an 8 hour time difference makes an enormous amount of sense.
Thursday.
I'm going to bring this to a quicker close. I'm not going to carry on at the rate I'm at 5 and 6 minute segments because I've been banging on for a while. I should really be telling you about Jack White because he was great, actually. And for somebody who doesn't know his back catalogue very well, I thoroughly enjoyed the gig. The band were great. He's out there on his own, but he's a really interesting artist. And some of the stuff he was doing was, I mean, some of the guitar sounds he was getting were absolutely fantastic. And I actually spent a bit of time listening to some of his work after the gig, and really quite enjoyed it. It's not a, you know, it's an energetic, frenetic listen. It's not something you can have on in the background. It takes your attention, and it's exactly the same when you see him perform. And certainly, it was an experience I wouldn't have missed, even though I don't see myself listening to a lot of Jack White moving forward. I can certainly appreciate everything he's doing. It's just a little bit, maybe a little bit too frenetic for me, having not grown up with it. But there's no doubt he is an absolute artist on his own and a force to be reckoned with. But the big musical thing, actually, while I was there, was something and nothing. And it was the fact that as I was walking through LAX, there was a Rob Thomas song playing in the background. Now, Rob Thomas is the lead singer of Matchbox 20. I've always been a big Matchbox 20 fan, and he produced some solo albums His first album being called Something to Be, and it was tremendous. That first solo album absolutely blew me away. Thought it was absolutely incredible. And I think he's incredible anyway, and I think Matchbox 20 are incredible. And I heard a song in the airport, and it reminded me of him because I've not listened to him for years and years and years. And it was like, wow, Rob Thomas. I'd forgotten about Rob Thomas. So it was like being given Rob Thomas back. And I've consequently come home and listened to the album three or four times and just immersed myself in an album that I went through a period where I was listening to it all the time. So I'm going to pick a track off the album for the title. I don't know which one I'll pick yet. I might pick Something to Be. I might pick When Her Heart Breaks. Or I might pick... I don't know. Wait and find out. But by now, you've probably worked out that the title has got nothing to do with anything in the episode. So that's why I'm picking the track. So it does, because it's directly, it's not a reference to something. It is far more literal, because I literally had a Rob Thomas experience while I was away.
Friday.
Okay, so let's do a little bit more on Rob Thomas before I do the next thing. I'm going to go with This Is How a Heart Breaks for the title. But I want you to listen to When the Heartache Ends as well. Or if you want to listen to another track, listen to When the Heartache Ends, and I'll find a link to that song as well. I adore that song. I just think it's amazing. But having listened to what Trump has been saying and some of the stuff he's been throwing around today about the issues around that crash, and trying to already throw blame in directions of groups that he wants to throw blame in directions of, and then having seen some of the things that were going on around the fires and what have you, then This Is How a Heart Breaks is how you feel when you see some of that stuff. And you know what, when you have to listen to some of that absolute nonsense. So we'll go with that as the title track. But I'll throw another track in as well that if you're new to Rob Thomas, hopefully you might enjoy. But I'm not going to finish on that. I'm actually going to finish on Back Home. I'm going to finish on shouting out to Shane. And Shane has been a follower of TFM from the beginning. I've mentioned him numerous times in the past, and he is the keeper of the information. He knows more about this podcast, certainly more about what's been on this podcast and what I've talked about than I do. And that's because when he listens to this, he listens to the same week for every year that's available. So he will listen to this week's episode, but he will listen to the previous episodes. And invariably, when he has the time, he'll give everybody a quick resume of what the different weeks were. So we've got this analysis of now 6 years, because he's listening to six episodes, I guess, because obviously we're in season six. And I read back some of the things I talked about on last week's. And obviously it covered lots of bits of NAMM, because obviously the weeks all fall roughly at the same point in time. And it took me back to some of those things, and it made me smile. I couldn't stand to listen to these again. I have to listen to all the podcasts again. I quite enjoy listening to TCD. I do that as a QC thing before it goes out to check there's no problems. In fact, this week's, which was largely made up on the spot, and involved nonsense around recipes, and I really enjoyed. I actually sat and giggled to it as if I wasn't in it. Today, I really enjoyed it, and I often do that. And as a piece of something, I can listen to that almost dispassionately as a thing, as a created thing. I nearly said a piece of art then, and I don't think I can say a piece of art, but you know what I mean. A pleasant way of spending some time. Let's leave it at that. But I couldn't do it with this. This has a purpose for me, and. And I don't think I could listen back. In fact, I don't listen back That's the point. I just chop the audio, and I normalize the levels, and it just goes out. But that doesn't mean that it's not nice to read what Shane writes and go, oh yeah, there was that, and there was that, and all these things that come along, because they are fleeting. You know, the thing about this is that a large portion of this will be fleeting. There will be bits that you get really upset or annoyed or really pleased or happy about that really stick. But there are other things that are just little moments. They come and they go, and it's a nice thing, and you share it because it's had an impact on that week, but it's not going to stand the test of time. But that doesn't mean that it's not nice to be reminded of them. And what Shane does when he does posts those, and it used to be a paragraph, it's like a page now, is even if nobody else reads them, I do, and it really means something to me. So I can't thank you enough for doing that, because it's a special thing for me, and I really take it for in the spirit in which it's done. So I'm going to do the equivalent of a Captain Bob, and I'm going to give you a wing wave for that. So just take a virtual wing wave with the love in which it was intended. And on the back of that, I'm going to wish you all a lovely weekend. Please stay safe. Please take care of yourselves. Please try and just find a moment's peace over the weekend if you can. Hopefully my circadian, whatever, my CRs will be back in better shape next week, and I'll be talking about the time zone I'm in rather than the one I've just come from.
If you've enjoyed Therapy for Me, then please subscribe and share as you see fit. This has been an A Short Stories production.